You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hi. I'm Tommy, and you're listening to Tea and Waffles, A Guide to 2021, powered by Transmission Roundhouse. The podcast series focused on tackling issues faced by young people and guiding you through this messy COVID period. In this new season, I've lined up 6 more topics and some incredible guests to discuss them with to guide you as we adapt to the new normal. Season 2 of A Guide to 2021 is back. And as they say, start off as you aim to finish. So how about we start off with a bang? They say you can be whoever you want to be, and we spend most of our lives trying to figure out what exactly that is. But I think who came up with that saying never received that all too familiar email. Due to the high number of applicants, we regret to inform you cannot progress with your application. As lockdowns extended and having more conversation with friends about their next steps or plans for the future, I found the energy in the conversations slowly turned from hopeful to uneasy. It's funny how you don't consider the possibility of you ticking all the above and meeting all the requirements for this job role, and an employer can turn around to you and not offer you an opportunity. Or consider having to put aside your passions for stability because something is better than nothing. Unfortunately, this is the story I hear all too often, and I'm sure it's a story for a lot of young people across the country during this time. The next section you're about to hear is a conversation between myself and LJ Rawlings, the founder of Youth Employment UK, all about how the pandemic has impacted youth unemployment. So if you're looking for some support and don't know where to access it or considering your next steps, stay tuned as this is the guide for you.
I think the pandemic has definitely made it a lot harder to find jobs. I think we've all seen, you know, the whole essential workers has been like nurses, doctors, teachers, etc. And obviously, yeah, they're underpaid and all that lovely stuff, but those jobs aren't for everybody. And a lot of jobs have suffered, a lot of jobs have closed down completely. Even within like the teaching industry, a lot of people have wanted to go into it because they feel like it's a stable job. But for someone like me, you know, who's studying to specialize in RE, that's now being deemed as not essential because kids are behind in English, maths and science. And it's like, what, how do you win? I can't be a doctor, I don't like blood. But yeah, the pandemic's it creates jobs in some ways, so like the whole track and trace, but I think it's definitely made people lose far more jobs than gain jobs.
morning, good evening, salutations, people. You're tuning in for an episode of Team Waffles, A Guide to 2021. The podcast series focused on guiding you through the effects of the pandemic and helping you adapt to the new normal. I'm joined here with Laura Jane from Youth Employment UK, and we're going to talk all about youth unemployment and also the effects of youth unemployment within the UK. And if you're struggling with youth unemployment, how to get in and what sort of advice and support is out there for you. But before we do all of that, I'm going to pass over to Laura, and she's going to tell you all about her and the organisation.
Thanks for having me, Tommy. It's great to be here. So Youth Employment UK is a social enterprise. We're a not-for-profit that was set up back in 2011, because back in 2011, we had a highest level of youth unemployment on record. So there were a million young people not in education, employment or training in 2011, which had followed the financial crash that probably many of your listeners might not quite remember that happened in 2008. And we were really interested in what was happening to young people at that time. There was a lot of services being created in response to high levels of youth unemployment. There was a lot of government policy being made to respond to levels of youth unemployment, lots of investment. But actually what was really absent in all of that work were young people and their voices and their lived experiences. So you had, you know, politicians in Whitehall and heads of charities and youth organisations creating services and deciding how to fix youth unemployment without really, from what we could see, ever talking to young people. And of course, as we all know, young people and their experiences are different to a very micro level, you know, to the very individual. It's not about where you live regionally, whether you live in a coastal or a rural area. They will have an impact on your experiences, but it's down to who you are and your internal barriers, challenges, and the opportunities that are around you. So trying to make broad policy or investment for all young people just felt really against kind of, you know, what good would look like in that space. So what we set out to do back in 2011 was to really hear from young people, to put young people at the heart of us as an organisation. So we're totally youth-led. I have a youth board, I have young people as board directors, and we have a network of, you know, a number of volunteer ambassadors who support our thinking on a daily basis. But more than that, we then go out to young people different ways across the year, doing consultations, workshops, and what we call the Youth Voice Census, which is a huge survey where we try and gather young people's experiences and challenges, so that then all of our work is based upon, you know, that very kind of detailed view of what's happening to young people, what they're experiencing. So we're very youth-led in that way, and that's been really interesting. It's part of our success as an organisation. You know, we work with the highest levels of government now, and I think largely it's because we're the ones that are going, have you asked a young person that question? You know, have you consulted with young people when you've created that policy? Or, you know, how did that look like when you make that investment? Are young people sense checking that it's the right money being spent in the right way? And so I think over the last 8-9 years of our existence, one of our biggest successes is the fact that now people stop and ask themselves whether or not they are youth-led, or whether or not they're responding directly to the needs of young people. And I think that that's in part some of our lobbying over the years. So we've become one of the UK's leading experts now on youth unemployment through those lenses of young people and through their experiences. We run a lot of work policy-wise and research-wise. We work with lots of employers. We're helping employers to be youth-friendly. A lot of young people say that barriers to employment are that employers are asking for, you know, 10 GCSEs, 5 A-levels, Duke of Edinburgh, 6 years work experience, you know, the list goes on. And so we help employers to really think about their recruitment processes, their hiring, their onboarding, and making sure that they're really kind of youth friendly in all the senses. And then we provide young people with a platform of skills and careers information. Because again, what we still hear from young people 10 years in is that the information inequality in our school system around careers and skill development is still a real challenge. Some young people get amazing support and some young people get zero. So we provide a platform to kind of respond to that, and making sure that any young person who wants it can get the right advice from us online free of charge.
That's so amazing. Like, there's so many different bits that you just spoke about, which I really want to touch on throughout the whole episode. But I think one thing which you really said really resonated with me, just because as I spoke to you previously, just before we actually started recording, I worked for NCS and I was a youth mentor. And one thing which I really understood when it came through to cutting through and understanding young people is actually listening to them. And I think that is really sort of like the key way you're supposed to lead if you do want to help young people and allow them to grow and develop and manufacture their own thoughts. One thing which I really want to understand is that, why did you guys want to sort of lead youth first? Or why did you want to take that approach as opposed to other sorts of organizations? Because I feel like they sort of have their own idea of what is best for youth, as opposed to actually listening to young people and trying to hear what they actually want changed and what things that they want done. So what sort of inspired you guys to lead with that focus?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I'm founded the organization, so it was all kind of sitting with me. I left school at 16. I come from a socially disadvantaged family, so I'm obviously old enough that I could have left school at 16. I wasn't this, you know, stay in education till you're 18 rule when I was younger. And I went into full-time work. School wasn't for me. I didn't particularly enjoy my secondary school experience. Didn't get great GCSEs, but I had a great work ethic. I had part-time jobs because my family, you know, couldn't afford to buy the extra things. If I wanted, you know, the trainers or whatever, I had to go and work for them. Again, back when I was 16, 14 even, you could have a part-time job. You know, you could waitress and do lots of different things at that age. So by the time I left school, I'd got quite a decent amount of work experience, just not great qualifications. And I went straight into the world of work. And I've, you know, my first job was in retail, and I knew it wasn't what I was going to do for the rest of my life. But I also knew, I think fairly instinctively, that I was going to be building skills to move on to the next thing. And then after that, I'd move on. I'd use all of these opportunities to kind of create a ladder for myself and move out of my social mobility sphere, I guess. And I did, you know, I've had an amazing career. I bought my first house when I was 19 and lived in London. Wow. Working and all sorts, right? So I had all of those opportunities, but from a starting place of disadvantage. And, you know, I guess what was obvious was people who were making decisions about young people like me, as I had been at 16, I just felt that they had no, I could relate to them as a grown adult with you know, 20 plus working years experience. If I couldn't relate to these people, how the hell were other young people relating to them? Who was talking about, talking for, or talking with those young people who were facing multiple disadvantage? I live in a town that's quite high on the disadvantage charter, and nobody was talking to those kids. Nobody was representing young people who were sort of second, third generation unemployed or just coming from, you know, a varying set of circumstances. What I also, I guess, in combination was I'd become a mum. So I was thinking about who is making the world better for my children when it comes to their education to employment transition. And I didn't think there was enough people doing that work. And also one of my careers, or a lot of my career, was spent in sales. Now, if you are a manufacturer, if you're a designer, you don't create a brand new product without doing consumer testing, right? Because you wouldn't spend the money. You wouldn't absolutely create a new trainer and not make sure there was a market for that before you went into mass production.
Of course.
But yeah, when it comes to policy and investing in services, government and white ball officials or local authority officials just make it up. They don't go out and test. They don't talk to the consumer, in our case would be young people, to find out what they need and if they'd use that service. So they're just kind of throwing money at something without ever testing it. Well, I've been a taxpayer since I was 16. I kind of object to my tax being used on a guess at something. So I guess it was a combination of all of those things where I went, unless you're asking the consumer, unless you're really talking to young people from the most diverse backgrounds, the most diverse experiences, you cannot create a good program, a good policy, as far as I'm concerned, that's still the case. So as you can hear, it's the thing I get most passionate about, because I just think it's crazy to do it to young people without letting young people kind of, you know, be in the room. They should have a seat at the table.
100%. And it's really great just to hear about your passion that you have for it. I think just as a young person myself and having a young brother as well, I think it's really great to hear that there's organizations out there who really, really are focused and do have a passion to actually listen to young people, understand what they need, and try and put things in place to be able to support them. But before we actually swing off into the episode, I have an icebreaker question, which I like to ask all the guests who come on the podcast. Nothing to be worried about. but anyone who listens to the podcast knows I'm a huge, huge fan of trainers. As you can see behind on the wall behind me, there's a huge stack. And the question which you like to ask is, what is on your feet today? Or if you haven't got anything on your feet, as everyone is in lockdown and everyone's at home, if you could have any shoe in the world on your feet, what would it be?
So I don't have anything on my feet. I am actually in my office, in the Youth Employment UK office, but I'm always in the office barefoot. I'm one of those weird people that likes to be barefoot wherever I am. So actually, if I could have any shoe in the world, it's really tough because I don't like wearing shoes. So.
Really?
Yeah, I'd rather not. Or maybe those, you know, I've seen those kind of designs of almost like naked shoes that feel like you're not wearing any shoes. They make sure that you don't.
Oh, sort of like Jesus sandals.
Yeah. No, they're literally like wrappers for your feet.
Yeah. I've never seen those. Never seen those.
Okay, I'm going to find you a picture and send it to you at some point. Remind me to do that.
Please do. Please do.
I do think the pandemic has affected chances of finding a job, especially as a young person. It's really difficult because there are people with experience out of a job, and then we're trying to get a job and we don't have as much experience as them. So it's definitely been really difficult. I managed to get like my first proper job during the pandemic, and I'm so proud I did, but I got that off the back of work experience the year before. I do think it's kind of a difficult one at the moment.
The first question which I have for you is, I know a lot of people understand what unemployment is, but I don't think a lot of people sort of really consider that unemployment is a thing which is going to impact them. We're definitely told from young that you can be wherever it is that you want to be, but no one prepares you for the fact that you can do all those things and sort of like tick off all the boxes, and you can potentially not actually get the thing that you really do want. So say, for example, if you go off to university, you study a degree. For myself, I did engineering. I can go off and go study engineering and apply to a lot of sort of the popular engineering companies, highly sought after, and I can not get a job straight after. I know that there was, for me during the pandemic, I have a lot of friends who applied for jobs. They had all the requirements required by companies, such as 2-1s or firsts, specific degrees, whether in mechanical or civil engineering, and they were unable to find a job. But on paper, they've done everything that they were supposed to do. They were supposed to go through secondary school, college, university, get a good grade, and you're expected to get a job. But that really isn't the case. So I really wanted to get from you, why is youth unemployment such an issue, and why is it something that we need to tackle?
It's a great set of questions, and it's really interesting. You know, it's another one of my passion subjects is how we're preparing young people in education for the world of work around them. And the conversation of what happens when it's tough just doesn't seem to materialize as part of your education, right? Youth unemployment is there are lots of structural issues to it. So if the economy is not working well, and as we've seen that in this pandemic, you know, the industries that have shut down, the businesses that have closed that will never reopen again, you know, people not able to spend because, you know, the shops were closed, all of those things have an impact on the economy. And when the economy is not working and not working to its fullest, employers stop hiring, we get nervous as employers. You know, we don't want to risk taking on more staff if we're worried about kind of the next quarter revenue coming in. So all of a sudden, you know, the economy's impact, the economy's success and buoyancy will impact youth unemployment. And young people stick out in that because, you know, you have limited experience. There'll be, you know, and COVID's the right example right now, in that when the pandemic hit, those industries shut down, people were put on furlough, but also many businesses decided just to close down. So they let people go, they made people redundant, they sacked people, whatever was happening. So all of a sudden, the amount of people then that are available in the labour market increases. But that's not just young people, that's people who have been made redundant with 10, 20 years experience, all then in a labour market competing for jobs. So young people get pushed to the side, because when employers do start to hire, they look for someone who's got that more experience. You're a more reliant hire, if you like, less risky hire if you've got 10, 20 years work experience than a young graduate who doesn't, or a young school leaver who doesn't. So you had this perfect storm with COVID, in that the economy went bang. The industries young people are more likely to work in, like hospitality, leisure, retail, and young people are 2.5 times more likely to work in those sectors, shut down. Plus, we already had, you know, 700,000 young people who were not in education, employment or training in March before that happened. And then across the summer, you had all the school, college and university leavers enter the labour market for the first time. So it just bubbles and has the greatest impact for young people. And it was the same in 2008 when the recession happened. Young people, you know, were locked out of the labour market, and we saw then a million young people become not in education, employment or training. And the thing that I was, you know, remember trying to get home at that point back in 2011 was a million young people NEET, as we call them, not in education, employment, training, equates to 1 in 5 young people. So that doesn't matter whether you've got a degree or whether you left school at 16 like me without any good qualifications. It just doesn't work anymore that having that good education and that good sort of grounding will guarantee you employment, because 1 in 5 young people are NEET. So you look at your peer group who you graduated with, in that peer group, 1 in 5 of those young people would have found themselves unemployed. That kind of scans across to today. So that's why youth unemployment's high. But also, you know, the economy is one of the structural issues, but it's also about social mobility. If you're from, you know, poor social economic background, if you are indeed Black, Asian or from an ethnic minority group, you're more likely to be unemployed. If you're disabled, you're more likely to be unemployed. If you've got mental health issues, you're more likely to be unemployed. So even within the cohort of young people, there are then those who find furthest and, you know, greatest challenge to moving on into employment. If you live in a countryside area, there are less jobs for you to look at, as if you live in a city, you know, the economies are different and the scale of economy and opportunity is different. So there are, you know, 20 really big structural issues that young people just can't control. So actually having a good education and doing all the right things just isn't enough when the world is upside down, and we're not preparing young people to navigate that.
I think that's really, really amazing, all the things that you said. And I think tackling those things, I think, is the main issue that we do have to face. I think even in preparation, I actually did a bit of research into sort of like the numbers of unemployment before the pandemic and post the pandemic. And I was really surprised. Mm-hmm. I remember, I think it was a parliamentary report where it said between January and December, unemployment shot up 10%. Young people in employment dropped about 336,000. Like, the numbers were huge. I knew personally, just from my small pool of friends, that employment was sort of an issue, but I didn't realize the scale of it. And I sort of just wanted to understand, like what sort of things are being planned to be done, or is there anything in sort of the pipeline to be able to support young people, and how can young people begin to access these things?
Yeah, great questions. And just to put that number out there again, of the people who were made redundant because of the COVID pandemic, 57% of them were young people. So of the people that lost their jobs, so those that were working, 57% were young people. So just that context, right, that you were likely more likely to lose your job if you were employed as a young person, but also if you were unemployed as a young person, you're less likely to get a job. So yeah. So it's all the which ways. So what's being done? Well, one of the first things that we did in March last year was set up a specialist policy group. So we are one of the UK's experts on this, but not on our own. Could we handle the policy fallout of COVID on youth employment? So we set up a specialist youth employment group, it's called, with the Prince's Trust, Institute for Employment Studies, Impetus and Youth Futures Foundation, four of our partners who are also policy experts. And we have been working, honestly, between March and August, I think we all worked 7 days a week to try and combat some of this stuff that we knew was happening, and we knew the impact it would have on youth unemployment long term. We haven't seen the worst of it yet either, although the lockdown is lifting, youth unemployment will take a much longer time to recover than any other age group in the economy. So there's probably another 2 or 3 years of it being really tough for young people, providing this is the end of the pandemic in the UK and we now can come out of lockdown and remain out of lockdown going forward. And none of us really know what the future like with that. So we set up a specialist policy group back in March, and you know, I've never worked harder in my life. The government were listening to us. We were talking, you know, on a weekly basis with the Department for Work and Pensions, who have responsibility for, you know, unemployment. We were talking with the Department for Education. We talked with the Treasury. You know, we were literally meeting with government officials all the time, going, what do we do? What policy and investment needs to happen? So just as you have the job retention scheme, which is protecting a lot of jobs, we also needed to have some other policies. So we lobbied the Prime Minister to commit to creating an opportunity guarantee, which in theory should mean that any young person has a guarantee of an education, training or employment place. So Boris Johnson announced that in the summer last year, and there's still a lot of detail to come to make that a reality, but it was something that we had called for. Then you saw Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor, announce his plan for jobs, and within that he put greater investment into apprenticeships and traineeships to incentivize employers to hire people through traineeships and apprenticeships, so they increase the money. So if you're a small employer, you can get paid up to £3,000 to take on an apprentice. So that investment does attract employers who then decide, actually, yeah, let's hire, but let's hire an apprentice. And an apprenticeship is a fantastic pathway, you know, for young people. But we also saw them invest in a program called Kickstart. So if you are unemployed and you're on universal credit, you can now go through what's called Kickstart, which is a 6 months paid for work experience opportunity. Because most young people find that without work experience, they can't get work experience. It's a catch 22, you know, you can't get a job unless you've had some form of work experience. So Kickstart is all about giving young people a 6 months paid for work experience opportunity, but you have to be on universal credit. And this is a challenging policy. One, I think Kickstart is a really good policy. You know, it's good to see government investing in young people. It's a £2 billion you know, kind of investment for government. They took this really seriously at the beginning of lockdown, you know, through the Chancellor's plans. But only young people who claim universal credit are entitled to that extra support. So there's a lot of investment that went into DWP. Things are being created called youth hubs. There's extra work coaches that they've recruited. There's this Kickstart opportunity. And there's a lot of good support through a job centre. You know, they're great at helping with CVs. They're great at giving careers advice and signposting. A job centre, if you think about job centres where you live, they know the local employers, so they know who's hiring, they can, you know, make those connections, all of those things. But young people rarely, if they're unemployed, will go to a job centre. When we did the Youth Voice Census last year, only 33% of young people who were unemployed used a job centre.
So I think it's a stigma.
Right? But actually, it's there for all of us. You know, it's there. I found myself unemployed at some point, and I've benefited from that connection and that opportunity at the job centre. There's so much help if you want to start your own business. There's funding available to do that. If you're struggling to pay for, travel or getting a nice suit or whatever to go for interviews, there's funding in that system. But there's also this great advice and great support that can come when you access the job centre. But young people just don't know about it, and so therefore, you know, the stigma kind of overrules the benefit, if you like. But actually, that's a real shame, I think, because it's there to help in this very situation.
Do you think the marketing of those, you know, those support systems or streams can be done a little bit better? Just because you did say that, was it 33% of young people are really accessing some of these services which have been provided for young people, but if young people aren't using them, then for less of a better word, sort of useless, because if no one's really accessing them, then what are they doing? I think in terms of marketing, I think that's where sort of like an organization such as yours, which is youth-led and actually listens to the voices of young people, really cuts through. Because if you're listening to the sort of ways in which young people do want to be advertised to or receive support or ways in which that would really grab their attention, I think that would be really helpful. Because then if they know that the opportunities exist, then they're more likely or more inclined to actually use those services.
Absolutely. And we have, you know, over 200,000 young people using our site every month, and we signpost back out. We inform, you know, in an impartial and youth friendly way, young people, what their services, what their opportunities, what the career pathways are, all of that. So we do that on our site, but I totally agree. You know, government are not very good at marketing to young people, but there's an interesting dynamic with DWP, which is that they don't want more people claiming universal credit, you know, because the higher the numbers are, the more expensive that is to the economy and to the system. So it's a weird thing. They've never really had to market to people because it's better for a minister that their numbers are low.
You have to dole out less.
So less is more in their case, right? So it's difficult. But actually, the current employment minister is called Mims Davis, and she used to have a youth brief over in a different department, DCMS. And I think she really understands that right now, it doesn't matter what the numbers look like. It's about making sure that everybody who needs help can access help. So they're in a better position, in my opinion, than they have ever been historically. You know, that they do want to talk to young people. They want to engage. You know, they're talking to us on a weekly basis because they want to know how they can help young people. They want to hear back how they can improve their services, which, again, you know, there's a real shift change in government that they do want to get that feedback. Whether or not they can implement that feedback is a different matter, because it's a big system to change. It's a really huge, colossal system, the Department for Work and Pensions, but they do want to hear it at the very top of the level. We are certainly, across this summer, we know young people need to hear that there's opportunity for them. And so we've set up a campaign with the Careers and Enterprise Company called Create Your Future. So hashtag Create Your Future. And we are going to literally throw the kitchen sink at that hashtag with every opportunity we can find, whether it's a kickstart through the job centre, whether it's a traineeship or an apprenticeship or a graduate job or just a job or training opportunity or a podcast. We are absolutely want young people to hear that there is opportunity. And actually, it's down to us as individuals, all of us. You know, when I left school at 16, it was down to me to make my future my own, to drive my own success. No one is there to handhold you through that, right? So creating your future is about you seeing what's available and grabbing it and taking what you need so that you can manage your next step. So I think, you know, it's a combination of all things. Youth unemployment is so big, so complex. No one organization, no government, no organization like ours can do it on our own. But I think collectively there is this absolute intent this year because of COVID to help young people in the right way. And that's something that, you know, I can sign up to.
I'll actually say that with how the pandemic has been, because of like how so many people have been like let go, it's actually more that now that things are calming down, there are more jobs actually, like there are more jobs being like offered to an extent, but then the amount of people that are competing for those jobs is ridiculous compared to what it used to be. So like, for example, let's say when there was no pandemic, maybe one particular job, but only 10 people would be applying for it. But like now, it feels like almost 50 people are applying for the same job, which is quite ridiculous. So yeah, so I'll say that there are jobs available, obviously probably not as much as, you know, we would love, but it's more the competition to get those jobs than actually finding the job.
I did notice there was one thing which you said earlier on that I wanted to sort of run back to. And you spoke about the collapse of certain industries and the lack of employers wanting to take on board the risk of sort of like inexperienced young talent, even though they might be able to develop into, you know, assets for the company. Mm-hmm. Taking on board that risk might be sort of quite difficult for companies, whether they be large or small, for them to be able to do so. I think one thing which I really wanted to sort of get from you, just because you work with a lot of young people, how do young people feel sort of the collapse of industries has impacted their ability for them to chase their own passions as opposed to sort of just stability? Because I know you mentioned social mobility being quite a big issue. I know myself, I'm Nigerian. One thing which is really, really amazing about my culture is that children and family like to stick together and support each other. So you'll find that a lot of young people who go out into the working world will definitely try and support their parents or support their mm-hmm. grandparents. As amazing that is, sometimes that puts an added pressure on them as well. So in terms of their mobility to be able to have certain choices and opportunities as other people, it might be limited because they might not have the same amount of resources or opportunities that other people do. So I want to know, like, in terms of people chasing stability as opposed to passion, how do young people really feel that, do they have an opportunity? Do they have a choice?
It's mixed. I mean, we're being told by our ambassadors and the young people in our networks that they've made decisions to stay on. There's a lot of young people that stayed on in education for another year and then try and enter the labour market just yet. So doing masters, you know, lots of grads have gone on to do a masters to buy them another year in education before making that jump. And young people are, you know, there are young people that were desperate to work in tourism as a sector, and that was the thing that, you know, really inspired them, and the tourism industry, you know, may after May the 17th go back online, we might be able to travel again, but for now the tourism industry, you know, for the last 12 months has been decimated. So of course, if you're really passionate about a industry or a job role, then, you know, if it's been affected by COVID, you are just going to, you know, to struggle. There is no doubt in my mind that it's going to be the most difficult for those young people that's more focused on certain industries right now. But actually, what I would say is I do genuinely believe that any job was a start, right? You know, young people probably have about 25 different jobs in their lifetime. You know, I now know that, you know, teachers who have been teaching for 15, 20 years are looking at leaving the teaching profession because they've done 15, 20 years of teaching Pythagoras' theorem or Romeo and Juliet, right? I mean, it would have destroyed my soul by now to do that on loop for 20 years.
Yeah,
so there isn't a thing as a job for life. And actually, whatever the job is, there's opportunity. This opportunity to build your skills, to build your network, to grow, to do your own self-development, to put yourself through something to boost yourself onto the next opportunity. So I think, just as I've said, you know, I left school at 16 without qualification, you know, without good qualifications. I went to work in retail. I'm the chief exec of the UK's, you know, leading youth employment expert that spends my time, you know, with ministers and all. I never knew that was going to be my path.
Yeah.
But I created a path by grabbing the opportunity I was in retail, doing a really good job, using that as a reference, you know, being able to talk on my CV about customer facing skills and, you know, problem solving skills and all the things you learn in retail. And that took me to another job, which took me to another job. So I think there's a requirement to do a mind shift, and that might really hurt if you've invested in, you know, your higher education to become, you know, to graduate and to go down a particular path. But actually, there's nothing to say you won't come back to that path, but the steps might just feel a little bit differently. You know, the opportunity to have a side hustle, you know, like your podcast is as we talked about before we went live, is that you are developing in parallel a set of skills with your podcast and skills with your job that are going to just open up doors that you have no idea will open. So there is a lot of opportunity. It's not easy, but I think that's the real conversation we have to have with young people is, you know, this is not easy, but actually there's really good resources, really good things that you can activate, like volunteering, like doing extracurricular stuff. Like, you know, I've done a lot of Open University kind of access type learning courses. We were talking about podcasts, you know, I'm a sucker for a leadership podcast. I've been teaching myself to be a better leader. All of that is going to, you know, give me a next foothold as to where I might go in my career. I'm on a board of a charity, a foundation. I was a school governor. All of those things are about me giving back, but also developing and growing, and who knows where that'll take me. So it's not an easy answer to hear that actually it could be really tough if you're very focused on a particular work area. It could be tough right now, but actually the more determined you are, the more chance of success you've got, because the most determined people will get to the top of the pile quicker than anybody else.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would say don't be afraid to take the retail job, to take the logistics and manufacturing style job or whatever it is, because who knows what that will open up. It's just that when you're in those opportunities, you've got to open your eyes to the next opportunity and the next, you know, chance to develop your skills and your being.
I think even just you sort of just covering all of that, I think it sort of just made me think really about all the jobs which I've had. I've had a whole range of different jobs. And I think I haven't left any of the jobs feeling like I hadn't gained anything.
Yeah.
And
that's,
I think,
the way to look at it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like it is just another sort of arrow to your quiver. Like it's just going to be another skill which you can take on board for your next job role, and you're more likely to succeed because you've had previous experiences which may not be exactly the same as your new job role, but you can sort of take those transferable skills and then apply them onto the new role.
Every job has, you know, every job is a skill development and teaches you something. And also I think back to one of my favorite jobs still. This is my favorite job, but prior to this, I think, you know, I've had eight different jobs, maybe eight different careers, maybe. And one of my favorites was waitressing. And oh my goodness, the friendships and the giggle that was, it was bloody hard work.
Yeah.
I learned so much about people and how to read people and made so many friends. There is always something. And I think it's about mindset. I think really having a winning kind of positive mindset is the necessity right now. It's about seeing opportunity and seeing the good things in, you know, the silver lining, the rainbows instead of the rain. You know, it's all of that really cliche stuff that, you know, I tell my 16-year-old and he rolls his eyes at me.
No, but it's true. And I guess that kind of really brings me on to sort of like my last question, which is sort of surrounding skills. I know a lot of young people right now, they're sort of looking for that next opportunity, and they're trying to figure out how they can make themselves sort of the most attractive within the pool of applicants that are all applying for this one job role. And I think a lot of people have been upskilling. Mm-hmm. And that's just one way in which to try and make yourself, I guess, a little bit more attractive to that job that you're applying to. And I just wanted to ask you, if you could provide a little bit of advice for young people trying to, you know, break through the mold and try to find themselves a job, especially during, especially difficult time like this, what sort of advice would you give them?
Yeah, so because of the time that it is, we have created a couple of free programs for young people. So we've got a program called The Young Professional that's available for 14 to 24 year olds. And it is a really great online learning program that covers lots of things we've talked about today, but also gets into some of that skill development stuff. When you complete the course, there's 8 modules in the Journey to Work a Young Professional, and each of the 8 modules comes with a certificate, and at the end of it, you know, you put on your CV that you're a young professional member of Youth Employment UK. That's quite a sweet opener. It shows that you've invested in your skill development. It shows that you've got some kind of additional, you know, kind of sense of self about you. I think young people don't use things like networking as well as they could do. I think LinkedIn is quite an untapped opportunity for a lot of young people. I mean, you didn't know who I was, right? And I didn't know who you were. And how did you reach me?
On LinkedIn.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
You know, but every business professional pretty much under the sun is on LinkedIn. So if you want to go and work in, you know, a big corporate or a small business or whatever it is, you're likely to find somebody on LinkedIn who is involved in that business, who might give you some advice. And I think one of the things that I'd totally recommend is reaching out to people on LinkedIn, you know, and for sure reach out to me, put in a LinkedIn message that you heard, you know, Tim Waffles, the podcast, and I'll accept your connection. You reach out to someone and say, hey, look, you're working in this engineering sector, or you work in finance. I'm really interested in getting into finance as a career. Not quite sure where to start. Obviously, COVID's had an impact on opportunity. Could you give me some pointers? And all of a sudden, because, you know, as human beings, we want to feel connected. We want to help people. It's in our nature to say yes when someone asks for help, unless you're an idiot. And then you don't want to be connected to that person anyway, so that's fine. But literally, you'll find someone who'll say, yeah, do you know what? I work in this type of company. Let me connect you to this person who's got more authority, or let me bring you in for some work experience. Let me give you some pointers. There's a real untapped source there of power of LinkedIn. And I think if young people politely ask for help, all of a sudden, you know, connections would be coming out of them. Follow the groups, follow the organizations, be inventive when it comes to your CV. I honestly think young people think they've got really good CV, they've got really good job hunting game, and they don't. You know, one of my jobs before was a recruiter. You know, literally within 5 seconds, I can look at a CV and know whether or not I'd hire that person. You have got to have your CV and your job application and your covering letter so good right now, because you're competing with so many people. We hired 2 apprentices last year, and we put on our kind of, we used Indeed, and we put on the Indeed, don't send your CV, answer these 2 questions, because we wanted to see what people's attention to detail was like, and 2, then we wanted to see kind of, because, you know, it's no good asking a young person for work experience, so your CV wouldn't tell us anything. So we asked these 2 questions, you know, why would you want to work for Youth Employment UK, and, you know, how would you tackle youth unemployment, whatever the thing was. Out of 100 applications, how many would you think sent their CV and didn't follow the request?
Maybe 50-50, I'd say.
Probably about 80 sent a CV and didn't follow the request, didn't read the details, because they would just apply.
Oh, okay.
So we were able to reject 80 people in one hit because they didn't show us that they could proofread or that they have any real interest in working for us. I am so passionate about what we do. I'm so passionate about my culture here. We love working here. Every single member of staff has a great time here. We work plumbing hard. I don't want someone that's not interested in that to come and join this culture, right? I want someone who's researched us, who is tailored their CV to us, who's tailored their covering letter to us, who's followed the process that we've put in place and shows up. I want someone that's connected with me on LinkedIn before they send their CV. So I go, gosh, actually, this is Jimmy Dixon, bit of a stalker, That's really key.
I'm hoping it come off like that.
It's those things, you know, when you think about the business owners, the hiring managers, you know, they see 20, 100, 1,000 in the same CV. What do you do that's slightly different that's going to make you stand out? And just stop and ask yourself that question. And the answers are all there. It's just about how much you want it.
I would say that definitely the pandemic has impacted sort of employment for especially the graduates. One of the biggest factors or reasons why graduates really don't get a job is because of the lack of experience. You know, some people they don't do the year in an industry, or they don't realize that how crucial it is to get experience in the first place during the university term. And truth be told, sometimes you're just so busy with all the university work that you have, it's just that you don't really find the time to do so. So it definitely impacted because you couldn't physically be there, I should say. And it also depends on what you mean by a job, because a lot of graduates have found that, like, actually are starting to do sort of, well, during the pandemic, sort of to do sort of manual labor roles instead of pursuing their careers. But in turn, I would definitely say that the question in hand, it is definitely it reduced the chances of somebody securing their sort of favorite dream career role, especially graduates, I should say.
If you've made it here, then you just finished Season 2, Episode 1 of Tea & Waffles, A Guide to 2021, powered by Transmission Roundhouse, featuring LJ Rawlings, the founder of Youth Employment UK. If you enjoy the episode, please make sure to check us out on all social media platforms at Tea & Waffles Pod and join in the conversation. But make sure to stay tuned for more episodes, more amazing guests, and more importantly, more waffle.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free Pocket Pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.